at night.
Welcome to Paris Cocktail Talk, the show brought to you by 52 Martinis, an online guide to the best cocktail bars in Paris. I'm Forrest Collins, and I'm here to bring you some small batch spirits news from France and beyond. Now, back in January during Paris Cocktail Week, we had the good fortune to catch up with Georgette Mogère-Petraski. Georgette is a writer. She's a lifestyle, spirits, beauty writer. She is the wife of the late Sasha Petraski, who was one of the forefathers, basically, of the current cocktail scene as we know it today. And with him, she is the co-author of a book that's come out, that's been out for a while now in English, called Regarding Cocktails, and it has recently been released in France. So we thought it would be a nice opportunity to get her onto the show to talk to her a little bit about the inspiration behind the book and a few other little fun tidbits. So welcome, Georgette. Thanks for taking the time to come down and speak to us.
Merci, Forrest.
Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your current projects?
I was living in New York for about 15 years and was positively smitten with the city and made myself a nice little career there as a writer and falling into fashion and beauty writing and then spirits writing. And that allowed me to travel the world and write all about spirits and cocktails and what everybody loved to drink in all sorts of far-flung places in the world. And during my time in New York, I met my husband, Sasha, at his bar, Milk and Honey, where he would make me copious shift drinks from when I came by from Flatiron Lounge. And eventually I asked him to tea, and eventually he asked me to marry him, and eventually we did, and had our wedding in the Rare Book Room of the Strand bookstore, and hopped a plane to Venice, hopped the Venice Simplon Orient Express, and came back, lived in Hudson. He started a book. Tragically, 3 months after we were married, he passed away suddenly, and I was left to finish his book for him, which was such a labor of love.
Well, I think all of us are sad about his passing, but I think it sounds like such a romantic story, and I'm glad that you shared a little bit of that with us. Can you tell some of our listeners? I know half of my listeners are going to be really familiar with Milk and Honey and sort of his legacy, and others that are sort of the newer generation of drinkers that are coming in will be a little less familiar. So Milk and Honey was a bar that opened up in New York. Can you explain to some of the listeners who might not be familiar with it what the concept was, a little bit what it was like?
Oh, happily. In 1999, Sasha had a fantastic idea to open a small slip of a bar and make it just a quiet, intimate little place for his friends and new friends to come in and drink. And he wanted it to be a completely different concept. He wanted to have a juice a la minute program where all of the juices were fresh and lovely, beautiful spirits. He wanted to get everyone off vodka. And he pretty much substituted any drink anyone could think they wanted with gin. So the concept of the bar wasn't even meant to be a speakeasy. It was just he wanted to be a good neighbor. So he had rules about making sure everybody finished their conversations before they left the bar. And any of his neighbors that wanted to come in for a cocktail, they had no bill at the end of the night. And he made a very civilized little drinking den for the very lucky few that were able to call and make a reservation to get in and just go back to another time of civilized drinking. No one ever ordered a Cosmopolitan there. They did order a Cosmonaut, though, which is a really fantastic smack in the face to the Cosmo.
I can confirm that. Milk and Honey was a pretty amazing place. And I know back in the day when we were visiting New York and managed to get in, it felt like something really special. And yeah, it was quite a big deal. And you can see a lot of a lot of aspects from that bar that have carried on into cocktail culture as we know it today. And so there you go. If those of you who are unfamiliar with where some of these things came from, it's from people like that, starting bars like that. Can you talk to me a little bit about the book regarding cocktails? It's called L'Art du Cocktail, now that it's come out here in France, in French. Tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind it.
Well, when Sasha was working on this book, he wanted it to be just the ultimate home bartending guide to kind of demystify milk and honey cocktails for the home bartender. He wanted people to see that a beautiful cocktail doesn't have to be so complicated. Many of the drinks have 2, 3, 4 ingredients really at most. And he wanted people to know how to set up their home bars, what equipment to get. And that was pretty much what he had. He was, again, just one chapter into the book, an essay I helped him edit on garnishes, consider the peacock, and setting up the home bar. The book came together with about 25 of the bartenders that he personally trained. And behind all of the cocktails that were contributed is a beautiful story of how the drinks came to be, Sasha's relevance in the community, and the love stories, really, that go behind all of these cocktails, in addition to some essays from wonderful contributors, Dave Wondrich, Dale DeGroff, Robert Simonson, and I've got a couple of essays in there on philanthropy and travel and style.
You do. I'm going to be talking to you about that somewhere at the end because, as you know, I really enjoyed that travel one. Now, what do you think differentiates this book from other cocktail books that are out right now? Because, you know, it's the time that people are writing cocktail books, and I think there are things that differentiate it, but I would like to hear what you think makes it a little bit more special than just your run-of-the-mill book of recipes.
Oh, certainly. Well, Sasha could never blend, and any book that was written in his honor and told of his legacy could never blend. So we eschewed the high-pouring cuffs with the crystal glasses and a lot of the high-gloss photos that are in a lot of, you know, beautiful books that are out now, but we wanted something very, very simple and straightforward and elegantly presented. We have all of the cocktails are actually drawn out in the glasses. Everything is essentially built in the glass from a photo perspective. And there's a handy little bookmark that lists all of the cocktail ingredients with illustrations next to it that is on a ribbon that just follows you throughout the book. So you can always mark your place. You can always use it as a code to find out what's going in your glass. So there's never any confusion about the cocktail that you're making.
I like that. Was that your idea? Was that his idea, this simple presentation? I really, really enjoyed that. When I was looking through my copy of the book, the graphic on the cover and then how that sort of follows through on each page for the recipe.
I know that he would be proud, but it was my idea, and I insisted on the bookmark and the geeky little code of cocktails to be traveling with the book. But there's also some really amazing gems in there. For example, the book's wallpaper, when you open it, it has a pinstripe, which I chose inspired by one of his favorite suits.
Very nice. I like that.
Even the colors were inspired by his favorite kind of Art Nouveau colors, that palette.
I love a good story around everything, the design of things. Something else that I really personally appreciate about the book is, you know, I haven't read through every single recipe, but I did spend some time with it this weekend. And I think that it's very nice because it's very approachable for the home bartender. And it kind of takes us back to a time really when the current craft cocktail renaissance was happening, where the ingredients are interesting, but not crazy. So there's a lot of cocktail books that are out right now where, okay, now you've got to make this caramelized pineapple syrup that comes with the cockroach powder mix. So I feel like they're accessible ingredients. And I don't say that disparagingly. I say that actually as a compliment. I feel like right now we have not enough people who are putting out simple, or not simple, but sophisticated drinks with fewer ingredients. I feel like people are really trying to push it just by adding more and crazy. And I feel like this is good. This is how things started coming back. We were looking at a few interesting ingredients and putting them together. So
right. Yes, he always said that cocktails were not worth intellectualizing. It's a drink. It's to be enjoyed. And the longer you explain the cocktail, the drink is dying, the longer you keep it from being consumed. So he never wanted any hocus pocus, liquid nitrogen or butterfly pea or any of that stuff that's going around now.
Yeah. Well, which is good. That works well because most home bartenders aren't going to have that on hand. So I do think that this is not only just a nice book, it's a nice collection, but it's also works very well for the home bartender. Do you have any particular favorite recipes in the book that you want to talk about?
Yes, where do you start? There's the sugar plum, which is a very, very simple cocktail, three ingredients. The story behind the sugar plum, which was a tale of courtship between Joseph Schwartz and his girlfriend, what her grandfather used to call his grandmother was Sugar Plum. And Sasha thought it was a testament to a gentleman's courtship duties to find a suitable sobriquet for his sweetheart. So that one is beautiful. The Gin and It is a very simple, straightforward cocktail. Two parts gin, one part sweet Italian vermouth, stirred, super cold, and poured into a coupe, garnished with a simple lemon twist. It's one of those cocktails that can be batched. It's a cocktail that you can travel with very easily. We actually gave it out as wedding favors in little boxes with the traditional milk and honey coupes for people to take away from our wedding.
Very nice. Well, I'll be doing some more exploring myself through the recipes and maybe batching some of those gin and its, which I do think I noticed that one when I was looking through. Can you talk about some of the other things that the book brings to the table? I know we've touched on it a little bit, and maybe Sasha's sensibilities and his approach to life. I mean, I feel like the book is not so much just a collection of recipes that work well for the home bartender, but maybe sort of a little guiding light on how to behave better as people and how to also kind of, you know, we all want to strive to be better, but decide, this is how I am going to present myself and interact with the world. What do you have to say about that?
Well, Sasha was a big believer in rules because he grew up without any in the West Village. He had the milk and honey rules, which were very famous, cast in bronze. You know, no hooting, no hollering, no star F-bombing. he had rules of, you know, a gentleman will not approach a lady feel free to ask the bartender for an introduction, and ladies, if a gentleman whom you don't know approaches you, simply tilt your chin and ignore him, everything to the finest little detail. But beyond that, beyond his rules, he also had personal beliefs, like his moral compass was set to coordinates that were really off the charts. He would never take a seat on the subway until every lady was seated. He would carry two handkerchiefs on his person, one for himself and one to pass off to a woman in tears on the sidewalk. In New York, you would see that often. The others were, he would always carry a card of my measurements in case he passed something in the windows, a dress or something that inspired him. He also believed in charity. He believed that a lot of the cocktail conferences and large events that are so prevalent in our industry, they're wonderful to have and they can be educational, but there should always be some charity behind it because there's so much money behind these events and there's so much room to do a better good. So that's how he founded the San Antonio Cocktail Conference, and all of the proceeds of the events there, They were events people would have to buy tickets for. Those tickets and that money paid for them would go towards Houston Street Charities, which helped children in need whose parents couldn't afford their surgeries. A lot of kids that needed heart surgeries. The motto of it was pouring our hearts out.
I like that. I do feel like it's important to combine charity and a lot of the cocktail and spirits events, because I think you're right. There's a lot of money there, and not everybody has the luxury of drinking just for fun. So I think it's maybe kind of nice to share some of the, you know, share some of the wealth and do what you can. Okay, so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about traveling and cocktail. You wrote a little bit in the book about travel and cocktails. So do you have any special tips for traveling and drinking?
I do. I also have some romantic advice as well.
Great, let's hear it all.
So when Sasha and I were first keeping company, we dated very old fashioned. Good night, Mr. Petrosky. Good night, Miss Mojer. We would actually call each other this, even when we exchanged our vows. To you, Mr. Petrosky.
Oh.
But we never cohabitated. There were no sleepovers. It was always picking me up for a date and whatnot. I adopted a cat. And I do a lot of travel writing, and I was often out of the country to write about cocktails. So I said, oh, maybe you could come by and watch the cat while I'm gone. So so I would leave, and I had this really lovely kept apartment in Brooklyn. And I made the apartment like a bed and breakfast. It was gorgeous. Everything was so considered, bath towels and lovely sheets. And most important thing was help yourself to leftovers if you're so inclined. But the leftovers would be things like, you know, a whole red snapper with maybe just a bite taken out of it.
Aww.
Or, you know, something inspired by travels like a bouillabaisse or a poisson cru. And I would find more trips to take and more notes to leave. Help yourself. Make yourself at home. And eventually, this had a great effect on him. And he said he would never tire of my cooking, nor my cat, nor my records, or my books. So advice to the ladies, anyone interested in keeping a little air of mystery, it's indeed the absence makes the heart grow fonder. I guess so does absinthe.
Yeah, okay.
But so with traveling with cocktails, when eventually we became more serious about our relationship and were engaged, and for the brief time we were married, we would find a way to travel with cocktails. It would usually be something pre-batched, like the gin and it. For him, he would really enjoy a Campari and soda. I would prefer mine with a mischievous splash of gin. And then we also had quick fixes for when there was no time to do these kind of things. So a pamplemousse soda with some gin, maybe a little bit of those mini bitters you can find. We would bring these on the train. We would do little airplane sizes for the plane. As long as you can do it in under 4 ounces, you're fine, mm-hmm. three and a half, 4 ounces. So we would have a veritable moving feast of libations.
Very good. Well, as I was saying to you outside of the program, I like the idea of traveling with cocktails. It just makes it much more bearable, and
yes.
You know,
and it's so much more civilized.
Civilized, that was exactly the word I was looking for. So.
What they offer on the plane, too. I mean, you're lucky if you get the Indian tonic.
Oh, yeah, no, it's yeah. So I've made my share of in flight Manhattans and old fashions and things like that. So I always appreciate some good travel tips for my cocktails. So I know that Paris holds a special place in your heart. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about you and your time in Paris and your past time in Paris and your future time in Paris? What's your connection to this city?
Oh, well, I've loved Paris ever since I was a teenager. My first time here, I was on a literature trip on spring break. And we were given the option to either just be flaneuse mm-hmm. or just, you know, do the typical touristy things. And I never wanted to see the Eiffel Tower or do the typical things. I would find myself in cafes and smoking those little 10 packs of cigarettes when they used to have them mm-hmm. and enjoying some wine and reading Sartre and writing in my journal. And I fell in love with Paris at 16, and I kept finding myself here. I kept returning, and it meant so much more to me, and it made so much more sense after Sasha passed away. We spent some of our honeymoon here. We took the Orient Express through Venice.
I love that. I was just reading about it. I'm so jealous. Oh. Go on. Sorry.
I pitched a story to wine enthusiast, and they said, you should go, and maybe you could get Sasha behind the bar. So that happened. It was a nice Valentine's story about that. But we together loved it here. He actually wanted to open up a small bar in Montmartre, and he was really looking forward to doing that. But for me, coming to Paris was like a new beginning for me. It was a second life. I moved to LA after New York, after the book came out. And the sunshine, the avocados, they're wonderful and everything, but there's just nothing like coming to Paris and having your Susan champagne and just making lunch and dinner out of beautiful fromage and cafe society where you can read and write in cafes all day and the people. I mean, I feel like I have such a wonderful French family here, both old friends and new friends, and so many wonderful people in the cocktail community that have not only embraced the book, but embraced me.
Well, you're very nice. I think it's very easy to welcome an interesting, nice, lovely person into the cocktail community here. Speaking of the cocktail community, do you have any particular favorite bars in Paris?
I do.
Tell us.
Well, Danico is very close to my heart.
She's actually wearing a Danico t-shirt. It's not a t-shirt, but like one of these lovely, like nice little shirts as we speak.
Yes. I was given my little Mariner shirt last night when I hopped behind the bar to make a water lily. I was doing a book signing there. And love Nico and his wonderful, talented crew. Little Red Door is also one of my favorites. I do love visiting the Ritz and visiting Colin and the beautiful cocktails that he whips up. And there's also another bar that's not essentially a cocktail bar, but it's a bookstore / wine bar, but they always give me my Susan champagne if I request it. It's called La Belle Hortense in the Marais. And the regulars there, it's like a revolving cast of Fellini characters. They're so wonderful. You've got photographers and philosophers and artists and writers. And I have dear friends that work there and who I always see there. No visit to Paris is complete for me without a trip to La Belle Hortense.
I've heard of it, but I haven't been. So now that's a good recommendation. That sounds perfect. I like that idea. So are we going to be seeing more of you in Paris now?
Absolutely.
Yay.
I'm trying to make it my mission to be here for the spring and summer, although the summer might be nice in the countryside. But I'd love to just keep my time in Los Angeles to the fall and winters and be here for all the best of France.
And if readers want to get your book, listeners who happen to also be readers, if they want to,
for both.
Yeah, I'll put some links in the show notes so people can find that easily. But are there bookstores here in Paris that are carrying it that you know of?
Yes, there's a Librairie Gourmande that has both English and French. Belle Hortense actually is carrying it as well.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. That's so far what I know of. Of course, there's Faden.com that has it and .fr if it's needed in French. If you hear of some other spots that are carrying it, I'd love to know.
I will keep you posted and I will put all that information in the show notes. So thank you very much for coming down and speaking with us this evening.
Thanks so much, Forrest. This has been great.
It's been lovely. We'll continue having fun after this, after I wrap this up. So people, that's about it for us for this episode. I just want to tell you that actually, Georgette, she turned me on to a new Cocktails and Spirits podcast by Prairie Rose, and it's called Bit by a Fox. I just listened to the latest episode. It's featuring Camper English, who is talking about his new book on G&Ts. It's definitely worth a listen. Georgette will also be a guest on the next one coming up. So if you want to hear more news about this lovely lady, give it a listen. But give it a listen anyway. It sounds like it's going to be a really interesting podcast on the same subject. And thanks to World Paris Radio for editing and recording assistance. Thanks to Emily Dilling for editorial and show note assistance. Thanks to Sun Little for the music. Thank you to Georgette for joining us. And like I said, I'll put links up to everything in the show notes. But if you're looking for more Cocktail Talk between episodes, head over to our site, www.52martinis.com, 52martinis.com. And finally, please don't forget to drink responsibly. Cheers. Shiver by